from the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. Hello and welcome to Grapevine. This is volume 44, number 25, for week ending Friday the 28th of June 2024. This week's edition includes mystery as to the cause of a big Yarmouth blaze, a Victorian fairground rides again, spotlight on the Royal In-Laws, and Yarmouth's very own Night at the Museum problem. Hi, I'm Andrew, your presenter this week, and joining me once again is Alison for a look at this week's news and stories in our area. Alison, would you like to start us off?
Thank you. Hello, everybody. Firefighters saved 10 dogs, including a number of puppies, after a fire ripped through a building in Great Yarmouth, causing its roof to collapse. A postman alerted fire crews to the blaze at the tanning shop and flat in Northgate Street at 5:20 a.m. on Saturday, which at its height saw 48 firefighters attend. Several people were able to evacuate the building, and one person had to be rescued from the building via a ladder. Firefighters also entered the burning building to save 8 dogs and puppies. Brandon McHugh, aged 20, the owner of the dogs, had lived in the flat for a year. He said he was woken up, quote, by the postman screaming and shouting up to me at our bedroom window that the house was on fire. Mr. McHugh was able to escape with 2 of his dogs, but the remaining dogs were trapped in another room. He said, "Thank you very much to the firemen and the postman for alerting me. I'd just like to say a big, massive thank you." At the scene, firefighters could be seen administering emergency first aid via special pet oxygen masks to the tiny shivering puppies. Great Yarmouth Fire Station Manager Chris Harding-Hook said, "Within one of the flats were some puppies, and we made entry into the building to rescue those animals. Our crews in Norfolk are equipped with special oxygen masks, similar to what a vet would use, to administer oxygen and make sure their lungs are clean. Our firefighters will do everything they can to save any life, and it was deemed safe for them to go in and do so." Around 20 people were evacuated from the neighbouring buildings for safety precautions. Mr. Harding-Hooked thanked the King's Arms pub for opening its doors in the early hours to provide refuge to those affected, providing them with tea and coffee. The cause of the fire is currently unknown, and a multi-agency investigation will take place in due course. The station manager added that they were working with partner agencies to conduct an investigation to make sure the area was safe, and as the roof had collapsed, a structural engineer would visit the site to determine whether it was structurally sound. Thankfully, all people in the flats above are safe and well. 2 GoFundMe campaigns have been launched to assist Mr. McHugh and LK Aesthetics in tanning. Mr. McHugh, who said he lost all of his material items in the blaze, which nearly burned him alive, is trying to raise funds for clothes and shoes. Over the years, the main building has been home to prominent businesses on Northgate Street. One side was previously Wheatley Jewellers, while the other was recently a butcher's, a fishmonger's, and was once home to the town's oldest post offices until its closure in 2008.
A Victorian fairground ride is back in action after a painstaking 15-year project to bring it back to its former glory. Malcolm Potts, a heating engineer from Cambridge, bought the derelict Gallopers in 2009. He has worked with fellow volunteers at Strumpshaw Steam Museum in Norfolk to restore the ride, and it will make its the public debut at Sunday's Norwich Classic Vehicle Club Family Day. Mr. Potts said, "It's fantastic to see it all back together again and working so well. What makes it all worthwhile is when you see the children coming off the ride with big smiles on their faces." The ride was originally commissioned in 1895 and it has featured in several films, including The Watcher in the Woods, The 15 Streets and Enid Blyton's Famous Five. The brightly coloured gallopers have space for 30 passengers seated on painted horses. The restoration has not been plain sailing though, and there was damage to the woodwork after a fire broke out in 2015 near some trucks where the parts were stored. but help was at hand as a showman from Southampton offered Mr. Potts a new centrepiece. And Great Yarmouth Pleasure Beach also gave him parts that were taken off a similar ride in the 1980s. Kiki Angelrath, whose late father Wesley Key founded Strumpshaw Steam Museum, is delighted to have the gallopers on loan. She said, "After all the time they've spent on the ride and all the setbacks they've had, it is absolutely wonderful to see it completed."
Students affected by the announced closure of Norfolk College have been invited to contact another sixth form for help and advice. Galston's East Norfolk Sixth Form College has encouraged young people to get in contact if they are affected by the announced pause in operations at the Great Yarmouth-based Sir Isaac Newton East, known as SINE. This comes as the trust in charge of SINE announced that from September, new and existing students will be transferred to its sister sites 20 miles away in Norwich. A spokesperson for East Norfolk Sixth Form said, "We are able to guide and support any young person who has been affected by the decision to close Sir Isaac Newton East, to ensure that their academic journey continues to be successful and that they have a short distance to travel to learn. Each year, East Norfolk offers more A-levels than any other provider in Norfolk, so we are extremely well placed to support students considering A-levels in and around Great Yarmouth." Following the announcement of SINE's closure, operators Inspiration Trust said new and returning students will be supported with transport to Norwich. People have been asked to email admissions@eastnorfolk.ac.uk for advice and support.
And staying with college news, a college's support for international education has been recognised at a Royal Garden Party. East Coast College representatives attended the prestigious event, acknowledging their efforts in promoting global educational opportunities for students. Assistant Principal Holly Chase and Curriculum Manager Helen Quinn represented the college at Buckingham Palace, where their dedicated work was celebrated by the Prince of Wales and Princess Eugenie. In collaboration with the Turing Scheme, the college managed to secure significant funding, enabling students studying in Lowestoft and Great Yarmouth to embark on educational trips worldwide. Destinations included New Zealand, Vietnam, South Africa, Italy, California, and Germany. These experiences offered students the chance to expand their perspectives, engage with diverse cultures, and progress their career ambitions on an international level. Speaking of the recognition, Mrs. Chase said, "The recognition at Buckingham Palace is a testament to the hard work and dedication of our staff and the transformative impact these international experiences have had on our students. Despite the rain, the atmosphere at the party remained vibrant," she said, "and the occasion marked a significant milestone for the college in the funding which has been secured." East Coast College childcare student Ethan enjoyed his transformative journey to New Zealand through the Turing Scheme. He said, "The experience changed my life. Going to New Zealand pushed me out of my comfort zone and my confidence soared. I learned so much about their education and this will help me become a much better practitioner." The exploration of international education continues to be promoted at East Coast College, encouraging young individuals to challenge their local boundaries and prepare for thriving in a globally connected society. The Turing Scheme is a UK-based programme that assists further education colleges in offering life-changing global opportunities to foster personal growth and professional development.
A charity has released voting guidance specifically for Norfolk's visually impaired residents. Approximately 38,000 people are thought to have some form of sight loss across the county. In light of the upcoming general election, Vision Norfolk has set out several options for those unable to vote traditionally due to their sight impairment. In addition to the large print ballot papers, magnifiers, additional lighting, pencil grips, and help available by request at polling stations, voters can also opt for postal or proxy voting. A machine is also on trial in parts of Norfolk, allowing the vision impaired to vote without sighted assistance, assuring a private ballot. Tactile voting devices are on offer. These fit over the voting paper and host numbered flaps corresponding to the candidate list, which can be read out on demand or in advance via audio. Vision Norfolk urges any person wishing to use these devices to contact their nearby registration officer promptly, due to limited availability. In a statement, Vision Norfolk Chief Executive Andrew Mortar said, "It is hugely important for democracy that vision impaired people are able to cast their vote as independently as possible and ideally privately." He suggested voting devices should be a staple in all polling stations to safeguard the privacy and independence of voters without sight. He has also urged people who are unable to get to a polling station on the day to take note of the deadlines for other forms of voting. More details can be found on the Vision Norfolk website.
Well, we've waited long enough for it, haven't we? But now a yellow heat health alert has been issued for Norfolk as the heat wave has arrived this week. The alert, issued by the UK Health Security Agency and the Met Office, came into force on Sunday and remains in place until 5pm on Thursday, when temperatures are set to go as high as 28 degrees centigrade in West Norfolk and with Great Yarmouth at around 21. Temperatures for Wednesday and Thursday, when the Royal Norfolk Show is held, were expected to be similar before they drop on Friday. The east of England is among the regions issued with the strongest warnings, with the, quote, potential for significant impacts to be observed across the health and social care sector due to the high temperatures. I think that means it's going to be hot. This includes, and quote again, observed increase in mortality across the population likely, particularly in the 65 plus age group or those with health conditions, but impacts may also be seen in younger age groups. The alert also notes that an increased demand for remote healthcare services is likely, and the internal temperatures in care settings, including hospitals and care homes, could exceed the recommended threshold for clinical assessment. Again, I think that means it's going to be hot. And also, hay fever sufferers across the county can expect to see dry eyes and a runny nose as a pollen bomb hits Norfolk. Well, I don't know where to get these phrases from. With the arrival of warmer weather, many people will be eager to head outside and enjoy this sunshine. But allergy sufferers may have to stay indoors, with the Met Office forecasting 5 consecutive days of very high pollen. For those sensitive to grass pollen, the warm, dry weather is likely to cause a particular rise. Millions of Britons are plagued by the allergy, with itchy eyes, a constant runny nose, headaches and sneezes all being common symptoms. High pollen can be particularly dangerous for people with asthma and lung conditions, and the charity Asthma and Lung UK is urging those at risk of asthma attacks to be careful and protect themselves. Erica Radford, the head of health at that charity, said rising pollen levels can be very problematic for people with lung conditions such as asthma and COPD. When pollen particles are breathed in, they can cause inflammation in the airways, getting into the lungs, making it harder for those with lung conditions to breathe. And this can be terrifying. Oh, the British summer, eh?
A widely recognised choir is warming up for an upcoming spirited summer concert series. The Chorus of St Cecilia, boasting 60 strong voices, is teaming up together with the junior chorus and guest soloists to kick off the series on July the 5th at the Minster Church in Great Yarmouth. At 7:30pm. Throughout the following weeks, the group will tour 6 churches, including Somerleyton on 11th of July, Winterton on 12th of July, Bradwell on 19th of July, and Horsey and Hopton churches in August. Each concert promises a diverse programme filled with musical pieces by Carl Jenkins, John Rutter and J.S. Bach, plus numbers from best-loved musicals like Fiddler on the Roof and Titanic, amongst others. Musical director Matthew Hardy, alongside Chris Whiting on piano, will lead the concerts. The chorus aims to put up an absorbing performance while garnering funds for the hosting churches. Tickets priced at £10 are readily available. Call 07786 165 690 or purchase tickets at the door on the night.
The owner of a former waxworks museum has been asked to secure the premises following complaints of rough sleepers at the site. Traders on Regent Road have raised concerns about customers turning away from entering shops as people have been sleeping in the entranceway to the former Louis Tussauds House of Wax. It is reported that the surrounding area has been used as a meeting place for street drinkers in the town. Great Yarmouth Borough Council officers have visited the area, removing a number of tents. A council official said the council's Rough Sleeper outreach team has been making regular visits to the area and is aware two Rough Sleepers have been using this site. Other people who may use the location as a meeting point are not homeless. The spokesman added the council is working on a targeted approach to address the issue, with environmental health officers, partners and the police. The building's owners have also been contacted to secure the premises and the outreach team has kept in contact with the nearby traders. One trader, who did not want to be named, said more and more people have been using the outside of the former waxworks as a place to drink alcohol, argue and sleep for the night. The trader also said business owners were afraid to ask the Rough Sleepers to move on as the old museum's doorway is out of shot of CCTV cameras. Another trader, Dennis Gavan, said he sympathised with the young men, no older than their early 20s, some of them, he said, but he feared it did put people off entering nearby shops. The House of Wax closed in 2012 after its owners failed to find a new buyer. Owners Jane and Peter Hayes, turned the museum into a home later that year. The museum's collection of 150 infamous waxwork sculptures was sold to a private buyer in Chechnya in 2014. Can you remember that waxworks of those House of Horrors? Chamber of Horrors, my lord. I don't know anybody dare even go on those steps. As kids, we wouldn't dare go near the place.
I should think they're haunted, probably.
Very probably.
A row has broken out between a developer and a planning department over a delayed bid to build more than 40 houses. Bennett Holmes, based in Bury St Edmunds, is blaming Great Yarmouth Borough Council's failure to process their application on a lack of resources. The proposal is for 44 houses and converting a barn into two houses on land south of Somerton Road and east of White Street in Martham. The council, however, has hit back and said the application would likely have been refused. A council spokesperson said, in this instance, the application could not proceed because the proposals presented challenges around local planning policy and statutory consultees. The developer is now appealing to the Planning Inspectorate against the Borough Council's non-determination of the application. Planning documents indicate a meeting took place on 25th of October last year with the Council's case officer, the developer and their planning agents, when it was confirmed the case officer would reply to the applicant with their assessment of the application. According to the developer, however, this did not happen. A statement lodged with the council on the 19th of June said the developer continued to chase the borough council but received no response and decided to appeal against non-determination. The appellant can only assume the application was not determined due to a lack of resources, the document states. The borough council spokesperson said, unfortunately, the applicant was unable to find a suitable solution within their desired timescales and has exercised their right to appeal to the Planning Inspectorate. This means the application can no longer be determined by the local planning authority and timescales for the inspectorate decision will be much more prolonged. The application is facing objections from three neighbours who have flagged concerns over the combined impact on traffic of various developments in the village, as well as the potential for White Street to become a rat run.
One of only two surviving Norfolk trading wherries will be retracing its steps through the city next month for its 125th anniversary. Maud was built in Reedham in 1899 to carry cargo and timber all over the county for Great Yarmouth businessman Walter Bunn. In the 1930s, she was used to deliver sugar beet to the factory in Cantley and then converted into a barge until after the Second World War. But in the mid-1960s, Maud was sunk as a breakwater on Ranworth Broad. It was not until 1981 that she was brought up again and taken to Upton, where she spent the next 18 years being restored by Vincent and Linda Pargeter, who formed the Wherry Maud Trust, to, quote, keep the spirit of the Broads alive. In 1996, Maud was added to the Register of National Historic Ships, and by her centenary year, she was afloat again. And to mark her 125th anniversary, she will be retracing trips from her previous life and commemorating a time when wherries were still an important part of the Broadland cargo transport system. Maud was moored at the British Sugar Factory in Cantley on Friday, where the volunteer crew and trust members were joined by Kim Dow, a retired wherryman who has experience delivering beet to Cantley. Maud then moved to the moorings at the Reed Cutter pub in the early afternoon, and on Saturday she was opened to visitors at the pub. On July the 4th, Maud, who carried timber to the Jewson Yard in her heyday, will be sailing into Norwich from Thorpe St Andrew and mooring at the Ribs of Beef pub before returning to Thorpe that evening. What a lovely story that
That's
is.
That's fascinating.
Certainly is.
Worth a visit, I should think. Thank you. Well, we've already heard about a fairground ride today. And at this time of the year, we often look forward to carnivals, fetes or other summer events. So here's some background about how they developed. Few people realise that England has some of the largest annual carnivals, such as Notting Hill, in the world. Carnival celebrations date back to the pre-Christian era, but modern carnivals come to us from Roman Catholic traditions. Carnivals have sometimes evolved from fairs, but more often from religious events, such as Saints' Day celebrations, parish feasts, wakes and Whitsuntide processions, and also pagan celebrations such as May Day. Carnivals as we know them started in the late 19th century, but they became more widespread during the 20th century, reaching their heyday in the years immediately after the Second World War. As we know, summer carnivals usually involved street parades of floats and people in fancy dress costume. They are an important feature of the year, and they reflect the character of a town or village. Great Yarmouth is no exception. During the 1930s, an annual carnival took place in Great Yarmouth. The floats had titles such as Lakin's Beer, Herrings Ready for Dispatch, or Eat More Fish. The Easter Fair has been held in Great Yarmouth for centuries, originally on Good Friday, but in 1715 the town's corporation ordered it to be moved to the following Friday. Meanwhile, the first record of a fair being held in Martham was in 1480, when permission for one was granted on the 5th and 6th of August each year. The fair was an important social occasion, but was disapproved of by the upper classes and the church, who tried to abolish it in the late 19th century. However, it survived and continued to visit the village on a circuit that included Acle, Potterheim and Great Yarmouth. Going back further in history, on the 19th of April 1814, a grand festival was held in Great Yarmouth to celebrate what was hoped to be the end of the Napoleonic Wars. In fact, it was held just over a year too early. The festivities included donkey races, a pig hunt with two pigs provided for the winners, and a feast for over 8,000 people, with tables laid out along the quay. Wealthier residents who had houses along the quay were expected to provide food for nearby tables. One such family were the Pagets. It was recorded that Samuel Paget, a shipping provisioner during the Napoleonic Wars, and his wife Betsy, contributed a roasted rump of beef, together with spoons, for the feast. The evening ended with an elaborate bonfire. Even before this, during the 13th century, Great Yarmouth had become the largest herring port in Europe. An annual herring fair was held, which was attended by merchants, traders and port representatives from across Europe and the Baltic. Later, in Victorian times, the Winter Gardens hosted some very elaborate parties, and it was the place to be seen in the affluent high society circles. The Winter Gardens was filled with plants and greenery, giving it the appearance of a paradise inside a glass-panelled palace. Great Yarmouth has been a destination for family fun for over 100 years, especially after the opening of the railway line on the 30th of April 1844. More visitors began to visit the area, and therefore more business ventures were created to entertain and accommodate the holidaymakers. The Pleasure Beach was developed from 1909 and initially consisted solely of a scenic railway until it was joined by the Joy Wheel in 1911. after the First World War, a water chute was installed, and in 1932, the roller coaster was bought from an exhibition in Paris. The Pleasure Beach was taken over by the Bottom family in 1954, then by Jimmy Jones in 1975. The Pleasure Beach Gardens were added in 1992, and the attraction continues to thrive. Bringing us right up to date, Gorleston's Clifftop Festival celebrates its 25th anniversary later this summer. Let's hope we can look forward to some fine weather for all the local events that are planned for this summer.
Just a pale and tired moon, the shivering sparrows on the smoking chimney tops, and all the children suffer from cold and flu and rain. No, don't stop the carnival.
Thanks, Alison. Well, the old town certainly had seen some lively events over the years, hadn't it? That's a very interesting piece. Thank you. Now, the subject of our royal family will always make for a good discussion, and be you a monarchist or a republican. But here's a piece I found from Michael Cole, the former Anglia TV presenter, news broadcaster. And of course, he was at one time director of public affairs at Harrods under the Alfayeds. And he's entitled this piece, "The Royal In-Laws Who Have Quietly Been Playing a Blinder." Prince William loves and respects his in-laws. Before his marriage and in the early years after his wedding to their elder daughter Kate, they provided the happy family life he'd always wanted but had not experienced during the War of the Wales that preceded his parents' divorce when he was only 14. For their part, the Middletons have played a blinder, fitting into their role as associated members of the royal family without putting a foot wrong. That is some achievement, what with the media and the internet trolls ready to identify and denounce any instance of them looking as if they were trying to exploit the undeniable reality that they are the parents of the woman who is highly likely to be queen, should Prince William succeed his father in due course and ascend the throne as King William V, or V as he's written it here, WV as distinct from VW. Any signs of the Middletons suffering from red carpet fever, which so often affects ordinary people who suddenly find themselves in close proximity to the throne, or that sort of folie de grandeur that results in an exhibition of airs and graces that is entirely risible and always causes mild amusement in the royal family, would have been pounced on by the social media tribunal of trolls who are avid in pointing out that the faults of others while never admitting their own spite and social envy. But there have been none. Not a single instance where the Middletons' conduct has given cause for public comment, let alone any criticism. They learned the hard way during Prince William's 7-year courtship of their beloved daughter Catherine that the best policy at all times was to say as little as possible and all of it as bland as possible, even if it meant smiling and being pleasant to all and sundry at all times, even if they did not deserve it. Prince William, who was 42 on Midsummer's Day, thus catching up in age with his wife Kate, the Princess of Wales, spent so much time at the Middletons' home before his marriage that his father wondered when he would be around at Clarence House or Kensington Palace to discuss the plans for the wedding at Westminster Abbey back in 2011. Quietly and with absolute discretion, the Middletons have played an important role in the lives of William and Kate and their three children. An indication of this was on the first occasion that the Princess of Wales was photographed in public after her surgery at the London Clinic. She was being driven in a car through Windsor Great Park after the school run, and at the wheel was her mother, Carol. The closeness of the Middleton family to Windsor was an important factor in the decision of Prince William and his wife to enrol their children at nearby schools, after Prince George, now 10, and Prince Charlotte, who's 8, enjoyed their initial school days in London. Mike Middleton and his wife are very hands-on grandparents, whose support since Kate's cancer diagnosis has been particularly valued and greatly appreciated by both the Prince and Princess. William, especially as his duties take him away from their home and base at Adelaide Cottage in Windsor Park on a regular basis. Even before the Princess went into the London Clinic on January the 17th for abdominal surgery, she and her husband made it a rule that one or the other of them would be at home every day when the children came home from school. Having her mother to help with the domestic routine while she undergoes the harrowing routine of cancer treatment is valued far beyond what anyone else might be ready and willing to do for her at this time. As every cancer patient is aware, the support of the family is crucial, if it is at all possible, as it removes at least some of the worry that comes with a therapy that cannot be less than daunting for anyone, princess or not. Kate has always made sure inviting her parents to events that she thinks they would enjoy and where they could fit seamlessly into the proceedings, Wimbledon being an obvious example, as the whole family enjoys tennis, and Kate is patron of the All England Tennis and Croquet Club. There is no handbook on how families whose children marry into the royal family should behave, with a helpful list of do's and don'ts, but the Middletons could now write one, were they so minded. Prince William, who gets on very well with his parents-in-law and has formed a firm friendship with Mike Middleton, will be pleased to see their kindness, support and underlying loyalty to him, his family and the monarchy recognised as often and as publicly as possible. Hence their invitation to the Royal Box at Ascot on Wednesday last week. And no fair-minded person could say they don't deserve it.
War, war in the world. Come up to the room, my sister won't.
Well, welcome back everybody for the final part of the news this week. And we start with a message from our good friends Edward and the team at Vision Norfolk. Edward says, "We've been approached by a yoga instructor who would be very keen to work with blind and vision impaired clients to do yoga classes. We would like to do a trial in the Yarmouth Hub, but for now we like to hear people's thoughts on this and whether they'd be interested. The sessions as yet haven't been agreed, times and dates wise, but we would like to give this a go, as we did have yoga teaching here in the past and it went well." The new yoga instructor, Georgina, has written a bit about herself and what she does. And it says, "Join us for this gentle and easygoing yoga class. Stretch and unwind with this friendly class designed to be accessible to everyone, whether you have done yoga before or not. The class is taught by Georgina, a yoga teacher and therapist based in East Norfolk, who has nearly 20 years experience practicing yoga and is passionate about making yoga accessible to everyone, whatever their needs. Yoga can have wonderful benefits for our health and well-being, and is a wonderful way to get some gentle exercise and relax. So if you're interested, please contact Edward, or if you'd like to know more, and as always, he's available on 01603 573000, that's extension 321, or the mobile of 07864 615 926, or you can always drop him an email at Edward Bates, all one word, at visionnorfolk.org.uk. He'd love to hear from you, and hopefully that would be a really good class that he could get going there. This major story came out yesterday, and I think you'll agree the figures involved were absolutely astounding. Cocaine worth £37 million was discovered stashed away on a speedboat by law enforcement officers after they intercepted a major smuggling operation off the coast. The stash was hidden in the bows of a rigid-hulled inflatable boat known as a RIB, which was being monitored by the National Crime Agency and Border Force in the waters just south of Lowestoft. Officers believe the vessel had travelled out to sea for a rendezvous with a larger vessel, where it had collected the drugs before heading back to the shore. In dramatic scenes just off Benicar Broad, one of the most remote sections of the East Anglian coast, in the early hours of Monday morning, a Border Force cutter moved in after the boat had failed to stop. One man was seen jumping from the craft and swimming towards the beach. The law enforcement officers overhauled the RIB and went aboard, where they seized 350 kilograms of cocaine, wrapped in large black plastic bundles. Two men, Bruce Knowles, aged 55 from Dereham, and Ferhat Gumrukukolu, 31 from the Netherlands, were arrested on suspicion of importing a controlled drug. One of the arrests involved officers from Norfolk and Suffolk Police. The operation finished at around 7 a.m, and both men were interviewed by the National Crime Agency investigators and charged to appear at Norwich Magistrates Court. Knowles appeared there on Tuesday and was remanded until his next appearance on July the 23rd, and Gumrukukolu was due to appear there on the Wednesday. Paul Orchard from the NCA said, "This is a very significant seizure of cocaine and will be a huge loss for the organised crime group involved in smuggling it into the UK. With thanks to our partners in Border Force, we have been able to remove these dangerous drugs from the market before they reach the streets of the UK, where they would undoubtedly have fuelled further crime and exploitation. This seizure is a great example of joint working to disrupt criminal activity and protect the public from serious and organised crime. Our investigation into this importation continues." Benicar Beach is one of the most remote parts of the East Anglian coast, between Kessingland to the north and the village of Covehithe to the south. The beach is a thin slither of shingle separating the North Sea from one of the region's most interesting features, Benicar Broad. Despite its name though, it has little in common with the other broads that we know and love in nearby Norfolk and North Suffolk. It is actually a silted up ancient river valley, which is becoming smaller as the bar rolls back with the retreating coastline. Its brackish waters have often been breached by tidal surges in the past, as the lagoon has varied in size over the years.
its remote nature. Visitors must walk a long way on the beach to reach it, make it a popular spot for bird watchers, and it forms part of the Beneca National Nature Reserve. Now, police have told an election candidate they will not investigate his complaint about a poster put up around his constituency saying that he has 13 jobs. Rupert Lowe, who is standing for Reform in Great Yarmouth, had insisted the flyers were illegal, claiming they broke electoral law. His team reported them to Norfolk Constabulary and urged officers to investigate. However, a spokeswoman said the force has no intention of launching the inquiry as, quote, no crime has been committed. The appearance of the anonymous posters prompted fury from Mr. Lowe, the former chairman of Southampton Football Club, who described them as a smear campaign by the filthy establishment. The sign listed the 13 roles the businessman is registered as having on company's house and said Mr. Lowe, if elected, would be a part-time MP. The issue of outside interests has been a significant topic during the election, following the intense criticism of previous Tory MP Brandon Lewis and his extensive non-parliamentary roles. Mr. Lowe said that many of the roles listed in the posters are non-executive ones and posts where he had no involvement in the day-to-day running of the business. Others are non-paid, while some relate to non-trading companies. He had insisted the flyers were illegal because they do not contain an imprint stating who is responsible for publishing campaign material and who they were promoting it for. However, a spokesman for Mr. Lowe has now confirmed he will not be pursuing the matter further. I'm sure we've got a lot more of that to come before next week. Three men and a woman have been charged following a fight which broke out at a Norfolk holiday park. John Connors, aged 52, Ned Cash, 20, Patrick Donovan, 29, and Rachel Harrison, 37, were involved in a fracas at the Vauxhall Holiday Park in Great Yarmouth. And following the incident on October 28 last year, Connors of HM Prison, Stockton, Cash from London, Donovan of HM Prison, Chelmsford, and Harrison of Wisbeach have all been charged with the fray. In addition, Donovan has also been charged with assault by beating of an emergency worker and assault by beating, and Harrison has been charged with wounding and inflicting grievous bodily harm without intent. The case was listed at Norwich Crown Court on Tuesday for sentence, but none of the defendants appeared, and it also emerged that not all are represented by defence barristers. Recorder John Brooks-Smith adjourned the case until July the 9th, when it will be brought back before the court for a mention. Some council news now, and Great Yarmouth Borough Council could face a fresh standoff against a disgruntled scaffolding firm which could leave its hopes of bulldozing a fire-ravaged pub in disarray. The council intends to use legal powers to demolish the derelict Havenbridge pub, which, as you will probably all remember, was destroyed in a blaze 2 years ago. This is after attempts to force the owner and the leaseholder to take action on the eyesore. However, HB Scaffolding is currently locked in a dispute with the council over an unpaid bill of £400,000 after it was called in to make the building safe following the fire in March of 2022. The burnt out building has been propped up with scaffolding the company erected shortly after the fire. The firm says it will not take down its scaffolding unless there is a resolution and the bill gets paid, believing the council should pay the costs as it had a duty of care to make the building safe. Michael Black, the owner of the scaffolding company, said, "The council can issue whatever order they like, but the scaffolding will stay there until we are paid. Legally, they cannot alter or dismantle the scaffolding. We have tried to do the right thing, but it has turned out to be the wrong thing." All this means the council faced the threat of a second standoff after a council meeting was stopped when a member of the public supporting the company refused to stop speaking. This whole dispute centres around who is liable to pay the bill for the scaffolding, which the firm erected around the pub as the fire was still smouldering as an emergency measure. Both the council and the owner of the building deny responsibility for authorising it to be put up. KB Scaffolding believes the council is liable as the authority has a duty of care to keep the building safe. And Mr Black said he has sent more than 200 emails over several months to the council, but he has received no response. Great Yarmouth Borough Council says it is, quote, defending rigorously any claim that the council entered a contractual relationship with the scaffolding company and is liable for the costs. A spokesman said, the council has no contract with KB Scaffolding and nothing further has been heard from KB Scaffolding's legal advisor. I don't think we've heard the last of that one though. A bid to convert a guest house that was being used unlawfully into flats has been refused. The proposal was to transform Shimara Guest House on Wellesley Road in Great Yarmouth into three maisonettes. Planners at Great Yarmouth Borough Council rejected the application over concerns about overdevelopment. They also said the creation of three maisonettes would result in a cramped and unacceptable living environment which would be detrimental to the living conditions of future occupiers. The guest house is a two-storey building with a basement. When planners visited the site, they discovered the property was, quote, vacant and in poor condition, unwelcoming to visitors. The report continues, the guest house was not currently operational. The property had been used unlawfully as an HMO, which is a house of multiple occupation, to provide accommodation to seasonal agricultural workers. This came to the attention of the Environmental Health and this use subsequently ceased. There were two objections to the plans. One raised concerns about the previous unauthorised use of the property as an HMO, as well as the potential impacts of noise and the use of an external staircase. Councillor James Dwyer McCluskey, who represents Central and Northgate Ward at the Borough Council, objected over concerns about oppressive living conditions, as well as flooding and general amenity issues. A previous application to convert from guest house to four self-contained one-bedroom flats was refused in February. According to a document supporting the application, the property was purchased by a company called CM Agriculture in 2021. He had said that although trade had largely died out under the previous ownership, the new owner intended to continue the guest house usage, mainly providing temporary accommodation for seasonal agricultural and other workers. In 2022, after the Borough Council's Environmental Health Department raised concern they felt the property was being used as an HMO, CM Agriculture closed down the guest house as otherwise unviable. Now, you can enjoy riverside views and a five-course feast at a Norfolk restaurant's new secret supper club. Cheska's launched at Hall's Old Yard along the River Yare in Reedham in April of this year, and it's run by husband and wife team Andrew Hollingsworth and Francesca Cornish Hollingsworth, and customers can dine al fresco or have takeaways. The couple operate from a converted caravan and an outdoor kitchen, and the menu always includes pizzas, hand-cut chips, chicken wings and a fire pit special. It's open on Fridays from 5pm to 9pm and Saturdays from 12 noon till 3 and 5pm till 9pm, and everything there is made from scratch. Mrs Cornish Hollingsworth started the business in 2020 during lockdown after spotting a gap in the market, and she made pizzas in a caravan on her driveway. She delivered them all over Reedham, and this led to pop-ups at various venues, including the post office tea room in the village. She met her now husband in 2021, and since then the menu has expanded, with Mr. Hollingsworth, a chef who has worked in Michelin and star rated kitchens. Francesca said, our food is always fresh, local and seasonal, and the only thing you'll find in the freezer is top shelf ice cream, which is still made by us. Customers have been coming from quite far afield and everyone loves dining by the river. So the couple have now introduced a secret supper club, with a five-course menu served once a month. The July meal will be a celebration of steak and lobster, but the date and time will be revealed when you join Cheska's mailing list, though the menu is kept under wraps. Francesca continued, it's an opportunity for Andrew and I to play with flavours, and it's something never seen before in Reedham. The restaurant's postcode is NR13 3TE, and it's marked with a pizza slice flag, and there is free parking. Well, that's it from this edition of Grapevine. The recording is copyright 2024 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. The news content is adapted mainly from the publications of Archant Limited and is used with their consent. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Next week's newsreader will be Desney, so we hope that we can look forward to welcoming you back then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, it's goodbye for now from all of us here at Grapevine. Stay safe, stay well, hopefully enjoy some more sunshine, and have a very enjoyable week. Bye for now.